This is a replay of the Wednesday night, April 3rd WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings. And unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And yes, we will talk about how to tell if you need an exorcist or someone close to you. From the same batch of tabloids, the Pentagon insists the UFOs aren't real, don't you know? And we'll tell you all about that report. And we'll also have the reporter who did that wonderful interview last summer with the military man who absolutely confirmed that you bet they're covering something up. So we have to get him on soon. But meanwhile, we'll tell you the cover-up continues, and we'll give you all the details on that as well. Play some of your requests. We'll talk about Cliff Foray. You're saying, who the hell is that? Well, you weren't listening. All right, so, but we'll fill you in on all that and more. We'll get to Bruce and Racine, who's got Mary Wells' requests, but we're going to kick it off tonight with Marianne. Marianne in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio. How's it going, Marianne?
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing tonight?
All right. What's happening?
Well, I'm going to share a little story with you, something that happened to me on February 26th.
Okay.
I know you know the city. I don't know how well, but...
Yeah, reasonably well.
Okay. I was in the car.
Yeah.
Sitting at a light.
Yeah.
On Devon. I was facing west.
Devon and what?
Cicero.
Okay.
I wanted to go north on Cicero, and I had the red light.
Okay.
So I looked south down Cicero to see if I could go, and I noticed three CPD SUVs like parked all haphazardly with all their lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, they're all standing around. Was there an accident? And I'm looking for car parts and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything, and then all of a sudden, there was like at least six cops. They all take off running.
Okay.
They're running north down Cicero on the sidewalk across from me, and I see they're chasing a guy.
Uh-huh.
He gets into the parking lot of a big hot dog place, and the one cop grabbed him like three times by his hoodie, and he kept shaking him loose. And I'm like, oh, my God, get him, because I don't know what's going on, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, get him, get him, get him. Well, he starts running north down Cicero across Devon, and I'm the first car in line.
Okay.
There was no place for me to go because I was afraid if I tried to get out of there, I'd run somebody over. Luckily, one of the officers took their SUV and blocked off Cicero northbound.
All right.
So this guy, he had to run on the north side of that car. Otherwise, I'm like, I could see something in his hand. And I'm like, I couldn't tell if it was a gun. And I'm like, you know, in the minute that it took for this to happen, so much went through my mind. I'm like, what if he shoots at them and they all start shooting back?
Oh, God.
You know, am I going to be collateral damage? So luckily, he had to run around the other side of that SUV, and he made the mistake as he's running eastbound down Devon now. he goes into the grass.
Okay.
And the grass was all soft and lumpy, and one of the cops was able to bring him down, and I hear him yelling, "Get the cuffs on him, get the cuffs on him, get the cuffs on him."
Right.
So I'm able to get around the squad car blocking Cicero. I go half a block down, going to the store I'm going into. I come out 5 minutes later, and there's three Lincolnwood squads. Because technically it started in Chicago and ended in Lincolnwood. And there's a fire truck coming. And I'm like, oh, my God, what? Did somebody have a heart attack chasing him? Did he get hurt when he fell? And as I go around to make a left back onto Devon and go eastbound, SWAT was there.
Okay.
And I'm like, this has to be something kind of important if SWAT's here. So I went home and I was just glad I didn't get shot. I thought, what if he runs around my car, pulls out a gun, and carjacks me or takes me hostage? And I'm like, okay, I got my cane here. Maybe that'll help.
All right. But, so where this happened, you're talking, I know where Devon is, although I always called it Devon, but I know where it is. And I know where Cicero is. It's not the most exciting interchange. It's off of 94. Did you find out where the incident actually occurred, whatever this was?
Yeah. My landlord's wife used to work for the police department.
Uh-huh.
So after a while, I reached out to them to ask them if they knew what happened.
Yeah.
And apparently this guy was threatening somebody, and they called the police. Then he barricaded himself in somewhere.
Well, like where? Thinking, the Exxon station? I mean, where?
No, there's apartment buildings.
Well, there are. There are. That's true. There's also
on the east side of Cicero, just south
okay.
of Devon, there's apartment buildings,
yeah.
And there's also small businesses on the other side.
There are. There's a tobacco store and all that. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I pretty much know. But, all right, so he...
So he barricaded himself in somewhere, so I'm guessing maybe that's where SWAT was called in.
Wow.
I don't know if he had a gun. Is that why they were called? But apparently he has mental issues.
I guess. That goes without saying.
But still, I was like, you know, you hear all these stories of people that have mental issues that are shot dead
by
the cops.
Well, right, or who, in fact, shoot other citizens, all that. So all was well that ended well, I take it.
I guess. When I told my neighbor about it, he goes, oh, he'll be out in an hour. I'm like, oh, my God, don't say that.
Well, sadly.
And this was at 10:30 in the morning.
Okay, all right.
So. And I'm like, I can't even go out when it's light.
Oh, well.
Like.
Well, good. I'm glad all seemingly well that ended well east of Eden's.
And then that's what it is, east of Eden's right over there.
Yeah, I know. Because there's a Whole Foods market south of that. So that's why.
Yeah, Peterson.
Yeah, that's the only reason I know. So, yeah. Yeah.
And I took a step towards getting another companion.
Yes, and?
Well, Saturday a friend took me to Morton Grove, and one dog I was interested in, I put my name on the sheet, and then you get to do a meet and greet.
Right.
And before I did the meet and greet, one of the staff members went by, and I said, you know, can you tell me about this dog? Because she had a tag hanging on the front of the cage with all her information.
Yeah.
But she pulled the paper out into her cage.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out she was so cute, too. 4.5 months old.
Okay.
And she's going to be over 30 pounds.
All right.
And I was like, no, that's a little too big.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I want something small because, okay, I have a duplex apartment. It's huge.
Okay.
I have a great big deck out back. I have a small yard, and a block and a half away is a walking trail.
Okay.
So I would rather have a small dog because, okay, I'm going to be 72 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't need a big dog dragging me down the block.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't think it's fair for a big dog to not have a yard to run around in and everything.
Okay. All right. Was this right way? Is that where you went?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you can sometimes look at their available animals online. It's the only reason I know it's there.
I did, and they had a really cute little cocker online.
Uh-huh.
Went there. When I asked about her, they said, oh, she's on reserve.
Uh-huh.
Somebody else is interested.
Oh, well.
Now, when I went on their website today,
uh-huh,
I found four cute little female chihuahuas.
All right.
They're not puppies. They're, you know, a couple years old, so I know how big they're not going to be. And the cocker was back on there.
Well, that happens. So call.
Well, they're not open. They weren't open today,
yeah,
so that'll have to be tomorrow.
Yeah, call tomorrow by all means. Now, but how big is the cocker going to get?
Oh, she's already like 4 years old.
Okay, then you know what your size. You know what you're dealing with.
Yeah, because I've had a cocker before. And, oh, it was the love of my life.
All right.
So I guess I can try to call them tomorrow.
Yeah.
And ask them what gives. I said, did you get new dogs in? Because you didn't have four chihuahuas when I was there.
Okay, so I'm looking now. What is the cocker's name?
Candyland.
Okay, because I'm looking at Abby and Abel in a cage. Let me try to get down to Candyland. Come on, scroll for me, would you? Let's see here. See if I can get to get Baby Bop. Nice ears. Calypso, Caldwell. All right, we're Carlo, Carly. I don't have Candyland. Huh.
Now, see, they weren't in alphabetical order when I was looking. There was 9 pages.
Yeah, they're what I'm like. Well, you know, it's interesting because the first thing I tried was I tried to do it on Safari, and it wouldn't let me do it on Safari. So I went to Firefox, and it's letting me do it, but they appear to be in order. But I don't see Candyland. So, you know, hopefully Candyland's still there, you can call. It goes from Camo to Carlo on mine.
It says what?
Camo, who is a terrier, American Staff Terrier, to Carlo, who is a Border Collie mix. So in between would be Candyland if it was going to be there. But so could just be the website. Definitely call when you get up tomorrow.
Yes, I will. Hopefully as soon as they open.
Well, let me know. I'm curious.
I will. I'll let you know. And
all right.
You know, I'm getting kind of anxious and...
Oh,
but I don't want to get disappointed because everybody tells me this takes time.
Well, there are so many, unfortunately, dogs who are needing a great home that if Candyland doesn't work out, it's just a matter of a little bit of time till something does. There's no shortage of animals who need you. So the ones they had there were
huge.
Well, but
I'm talking Great Pyrenees.
Well, I understand.
German Shepherd,
yeah.
You know, just...
Yeah, I understand.
Too big to be cooped up in the house with me.
Something you don't want to have to saddle. I like the big ones myself, but, you know...
Believe me, if I had the room, I would. Because you know me, I used to ride horses.
Well, don't ride the dogs, though, please.
No.
kills their backs. There are plenty, and especially Chihuahua mixes and things like that, you will have no trouble. So keep me posted.
You know, I went on and Googled Chihuahua Rescue.
Uh-huh.
And it sent me to a website that had no name,
yeah,
a P.O. box number, no phone number, and I'm like...
But
they want you to fill out all the information.
Yeah, right, exactly. They want to know everything about you. They probably want a picture of your yard, and God only knows what else. Stick with Right Way for the moment.
That's what everybody's been saying.
Yeah. All right, keep me posted.
I will.
All right, thanks.
Okay, good night.
Good night, and Marianne's going to get a new friend, and just a matter of time, and I'm looking at all the possibilities right now. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Bruce and Racine. There's room for you two coming up right here on WGN Radio.
Well, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that, ooh, wee, look at that. She's so fine, fine, fine. She's so fine.
James, that's the first thing that ever charted for Jackie Wilson, and interesting, it did not make the R&B charts, but it made the pop charts, 1957 on Brunswick, and of course Berry Gordy, who his all-time favorite male vocalist was Jackie Wilson, co-wrote that along with Billy Roquel Davis under the Tyrone Carlo pseudonym, and that was a request that Bill in Boston had. So 888-876-5593. Bruce and Racine, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you, and a good show, always. That's why I tune in. I recommend if you're not listening to Raleigh, well, what's wrong with you? I am curious about Mary Wells' career. I had my last wife, we were Mary Wells fans. Oh, she introduced me. I got the box set. It all got away from me. But if you could play... you beat me to the punch. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you...
No, I have
and
tons of...
And then give
of,
me a little Mary of, on, yeah, the, yeah, on the radio there.
Okay, I'll be happy to tell you all about her, and it's a sad story, unfortunately, but I'll be happy to play
it. Oh, no.
Yeah, it is. But we'll go over it and some of the stuff she did after Motown. All right, I'll do that next. Coming up, Bruce, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, I was actually going to talk about Cliff Hurray, but we'll hold that for a moment there while we do some You Beat Me to the Punch. And you probably know the Mary Wells saga, but we'll review the high points, if not the low points, coming up on WGN Radio.
James,
course, is Mary Wells. What a divine song. Smokey Robinson co-wrote that with Robert White, who was a guitarist for Motown and a heck of a great guitarist. If you listen to the opening of My Guy, The Temptations, you'll hear one of his riffs. And he was just terrific. But You Beat Me to the Punch, 1962 on Motown. I thought it was a great little record, and so apparently did Gene Chandler, because, of course, he did an answer record, you'll probably remember, You Threw a Lucky Punch.
That day, oh yeah, when you walked away, I wanted to call you back, but I didn't know what to say. But when you said you had to part, something hit me all at once. Love walked right in and caught me by surprise, 'cause you threw a lucky punch.
And the guy who adapted it was actually Don Covey. So Smokey and Robert still got the writing credits, but along with it, Don Covey, and that was Gene Chandler. It was Calvin Carter doing the backgrounds and some of his friends, and that was actually the flip side of a rainbow. But I digress. We had Bruce asking about Mary Wells. And in the early days, man, was she ever a golden girl on Motown? How she got there, actually, is part of how she left. She's a child. And certainly too young to sign a contract. Yeah, that's going to come into our story. But she had been sick as a kid, and then she overcame a bunch of different things. And, I mean, serious, serious stuff. She had spinal meningitis. And so, you know, down for the count, except she came back. And when she did, she demonstrated a heck of a gift for singing by the time she was 10 years old. And so she was doing all the talent contests around Detroit. And one of the guys who saw her was Robert Bateman. And, of course, he was personal assistant to Berry Gordy. So she, as a child, said, you know, I've written this song, Bye Bye Baby, and I think it'd be perfect for Jackie Wilson. And so Bateman introduced her to Berry Gordy, and Gordy said, well, let me hear the song. And so she sang it for him, and he said, well, I'll buy the song, but I'll sign you to a contract. And so she recorded the song herself, and it became a, you know, minor hit. And after that, it was just huge for her for a couple of years. She was signed with a team with Smokey, and, you know, You Beat Me to the Punch, Two Lovers, Laughing Boy, Your Old Standby, on and on. You can get on that. You probably easily off the top of your head come up with a dozen different great records. The One Who Really Loves You, and Two Lovers, and What's Easy for Two is So Hard for One, and Laughing Boy, and on, just terrific. And this is all 62 and 63. The interesting thing, as an aside, when Berry said, I'm going to sign you to Motown, she protested. She said, I don't know what, I don't want to be on Motown, I want to be on Tamla. Because, of course, remember, when Berry Gordy started Motown as a company, the label originally that he put the acts on was Tamla. So she thought, I want to be with the big boys. I want to be on Tamla. No, no. And so on Motown she went, which was fine. And then 64, of course, comes My Guy. An absolute stone-cold smash, period. Now, remember, she's still a child. She's at that point when My Guy came out, she was, about 17 when she recorded it, and then she's a little older when it came out. But in any event, she had gotten married to Herman Griffin, who was a songwriter for Motown, and he convinced her that she wasn't getting enough on her royalties, and they're not paying her enough, and she should sue the label. Well, now, in addition to Herman, by this time, there's starting to be a little dissent in the ranks because, you know, the first big group for Motown really was the Marvelettes, as far as number one records and all that kind of stuff. And they were just in clover for years until, of course, here comes the Supremes, and here's Berry Gordy involved with Diana Ross. And bottom line is that all the ladies, the girls of Motown, started to think, you know, we're getting short shrift here. It actually became more apparent within a couple of years. But this is still kind of going on when Herman says to Mary, you need to sue him. Well, so she did. And, of course, she was only 17 years old, so the courts had to rule in her favor. They signed that the contract was invalid. But in the process, okay, it's invalid, she's free to go. The court let her out of her contract, but she didn't get to take anything with her. There were no royalties, there were no rights, there were no nothing. And so she immediately signed a contract with 20th Century Fox. And the reason she did is that they promised her the sun and the moon. You're going to be in movie deals, and you're going to be on TV, and you're going to be on this and that and the other thing. And I think they released five 45s, and they never cast her in any movies. Some of the 45s were pretty darn good, actually. He's a Lover, Never Leave You. And then same year, Atco, she had a deal with them where they put Dear Lover out. And Dear Lover, of course, became a huge, huge beach music record. But, you know, none of these are real hits. The bottom line was after My Guy, that was pretty much it. And she tried, you know, and after Dear Lover and Dig the Way I Feel and things like that, she you know, really tried. But by the end of the 60s, she said, that's it. I'm retiring. And she did for a while, you know, day jobs, things like that. But in the early 80s, this was all part of when, you know, the rock and roll revival, if you will. By now, it had started really in the early 70s. All the touring and packaging was coming back with a vengeance. So she returned to touring. And it was pretty amazing because for 10 years, she was able to do a lot of performances. You're not talking about hits. You're not talking about records. But boy, are you ever talking about on the road money. Well, until 1990. And that's when she was diagnosed with cancer of the larynx. And she admitted she smoked 2 packs a day, but the bottom line is the treatment left her unable to sing, as you can imagine. By this time, she had no health insurance. The therapy just completely devastated her. She was evicted from her apartment she and her daughter were living in. And fortunately, a lot of industry people stepped up and did benefits and all, including, you know, the likes of Bruce Springsteen and even Diana Ross, actually, and Elton John. She was at a number of tribute things, and she said, you know, I'm gonna fight for this. And sadly, she did, but cancer won in July of 1992. It was a bout with pneumonia that took her out. And that was the deal with Mary Wells. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, what would have happened if she stayed? You know, it's very hard to tell because you saw what happened to the Marvelettes. You know, they were the golden girls, and next thing you know, boy, they're getting nothing. And so they pretty much disbanded in the 60s as well. But that's the story of Mary Wells, and maybe we'll play a little of a Dear Lover and He's a Lover and Never, Never Leave You for Bruce if he hasn't heard any of those. Not all of them, but maybe some. And we'll get to Robert's request in Stickney. I don't know what he wants to hear, but we're going to play it, I think. And as far as that goes, I know if you listen to this show, well, one thing's for sure, you're a radio lover. You couldn't probably put up with me if you weren't. And if you are, you probably know all about Bob Crane. And he should be knighted for what he's done for radio, because years and years ago, decades now, when the current radio is being made just had lousy reception, particularly AM, but FM as well, he said, I can do better. And he did. And the bottom line is the C. Crane Company is really designed around that, Bob Crane's desire that every radio he would put out would just have spectacular reception. But in addition to that, all of them have really neat features. And the CC Radio Solar is just a gem. Yeah, this is the radio that's going to save you. And why I say that is that, you know, here it is. It's night. The lights go out. You reach for the flashlight. There's no batteries. You reach for the radio. There's no batteries. Well, with the CC Radio Solar, you're always going to have a light and you're always going to have communication because there are so many ways to power this. Oh, sure, you can get an AM power adapter optional with it, or you can put in some AA batteries, actually three AA batteries, and that'll work. You can put it on a windowsill, and its solar power is just magnificent as far as that goes. And when all else fails, you can hand crank it for about 30 seconds, and it'll play for about 30 minutes. But not only that, it has the ability to charge your cell phone. Now, you're not going to do this day to day, but in the event you've got a situation where it's an emergency, you need a cell phone, your battery is dead as a doornail, this radio will probably be able to bring it up to power. Not every model, but most, to the fact that you can at least make some emergency calls. So it is peace of mind. It's got, of course, the weather band and a weather alert, but what, and the flashlight, like I say, and a digital readout and a lighted dial and neat tuning, too, as far as that goes, on AM, both 1, 9, and 10 kilohertz. So no matter where you are in the world, you will be able to pick up stations. And you've got 5 one-touch memory presets and all that. But it is just tremendous, and I think you're going to like it. And it looks good. It's fairly small footprint too, and you can read all about it at ccradio.com. And yeah, great AM, great FM, and of course, a weather band and weather alert and just everything you need. And if you can't, go online. And if you can, go to ccradio.com. But if you can't, well, you can call them. They've got the world's best customer service, and they're there 24 hours a day. So call them at 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. You can order on the phone, or you can ask them to send you a catalog. They'll send you one in the mail. They'll answer all your questions. It's just terrific. If you can go online, though, that's where you want to go. Now, I'll tell you, whether you do it by phone or whether you do it online, right now, this week, you save $10. And that's nice. So save $10 off the purchase of the CC Radio Solar this week only. So either at ccradio.com or call them 800-522-8863. So if you've been thinking about it, well, this is the week it'll save you money. The CC Radio Solar. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is, 1965 on ATCO. Dear Lover, Mary Wells. I don't think she ever sounded better. That was a huge, huge beach music hit. Everybody shagged to it. Just a terrific song. Like I say, she also had about 545s on 20th Century as well. They put out the records. They never got her in any movies or anything like that, but let you hear a sample. This was later redone by a few different soul singers. Never really was a hit, but Mary Wells did the first version of Never Never Leave.
I love you more than anyone should ever be allowed to love anyone or anything.
Anyone or anything.
And I need you more than anyone should ever be allowed to need anyone or anything.
Anyone or anything.
So darling, please don't ever break my heart. I beg you, please don't ever make us part. Cause without you I'd be a little lost sheep. And I don't.
And so that did absolutely nothing. And like I say, a few people tried to have a hit with, including a very nice version by Geraldine Hunt, and it went absolutely nowhere. But likewise with He's a Lover, just a cute little record, but never got the light of day.
But I tell you truthfully, when he's all alone with me, he's a lover. Yeah,
he's a lover.
He's kind of quiet in a crowd. He never likes to come on loud. But when all the people go and we turn the lights down low, he's a lover. Yeah,
didn't even break the charts. Breaks My Heart. I thought it was a great little record. And Never Never Leave Me, the 20th Century record, that got to number 15 on the R&B charts, and it actually did chart pop as well in the 50s. Dear Lover was a top 10 R&B record in 66, as far as that goes, and I think also in the 50s on the pop charts. So they got some chart action, but just really, really nothing. So I would say, Ain't It the Truth on 20th also broke the top 10 R&B, but other than that, her big stuff, of course, was Motown. Rest in peace, Mary Wells. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, that takes us to Robert in Stickney. What's up tonight, Robert?
I just called when I heard about the gentleman that called about Mary Wells. Mm. If sometime tonight, if you could squeeze in one of my favorites, The One Who Really Loves You.
Oh, I love that song, of course. All right, you got it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, what a fine. Actually, my guy, her biggest record, was certainly not my favorite, but The One Who Really Loves You, you betcha, it's a great record. So we'll do that. And we'll also, for Fran, talk about Cliff Ferret, or as I used to like to call him, Cliff Ferry, and his double entendre career. And the Pentagon, of course, insisting that UFOs aren't real. And I'm pretty sure that this was in response to the News Nation interview that you probably heard last summer, and where they had the government whistleblower talk about what he had seen. So March 8th of this year, 63-page report released by the Pentagon, the Anomaly Research Office, the Arrow, says investigators looked very hard, but they found absolutely no proof. Yeah, that terrestrials have been spying on us or visiting the planet, or that UFOs, anything you might see along those lines, none of them are from outer space. And they said that all of the whistleblowers, they're wrong. The government and sneaky private companies, none of them have their hands on extraterrestrial tech to reverse engineer UFOs in secret. And so they found absolutely no evidence that the U.S. government has any relationship whatsoever. And so, which with a UAP, as they call them, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. And so I think most people who read that report laughed. And I'm pretty sure there'll be a follow-up. And like I say, I want to have the journalist who broke the news last summer on, and we'll talk about what's happened since then. Because interestingly, what this article doesn't mention is that several other employees of both the military and government services have come forward, not so much forward, some of them anonymously, but to say, hey, we can back that up. So that'll be interesting as time goes on. And if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, and if all else fails, yes, we will read the tabloids. I haven't forgot about how to spot if you buy an exorcist, maybe if you need one yourself, information you'll want to have coming up on WGN Radio.
Luigi brought Rosie home one morning when it was getting light. She invited him into the house for a hug and a little kiss, a good night. Luigi decided he'd propose and started to get on his knees. But he tripped and he and Rosie fell across the piano keys. The noise awoke Rosie's folks and Papa came down to investigate. He arrived and saw poor Rosie still pinned to the 88. Papa became suspicious of what the scene was all about. His face got red, he spluttered a bit and then began to shout, "Hey, please don't bang on the piano. You're gonna wake up the whole neighborhood. Oh, please don't bang on the piano. You promised your mama and me that you'd be good." When Papa was gone, Luigi got up to give Rose a helping hand. But he slipped again and back they fell across the baby grand. Papa rushed back into the room and saw them where they fell. Then losing all of his self-control, he started in to yell, "What's the matter for you, Luigi? Don't you think twice? Why do you bang the piano? That's not very nice. If you gotta bang something, be nicer, girls and boys. Why don't you bang on the sofa? Well, you're not making no noise. Hey, please don't bang on the piano. Don't you ever stop to use your head. Hey, please don't bang on the piano." And with this, the old man went back up to bed. Rosie was serving coffee in Mama's favorite chinaware, but Luigi slipped and his coffee cup went sailing through the air. When it hit the piano, Papa jumped back out of bed. He ran back down to the living room, and this is what he said. It's not time and a place to bang, Nunge, you got enough pride. Why don't you drive in the country and do your banging outside? First you bang in the piano, then you break your mama's cup. Luigi, you're so clumsy, you're gonna knock my Rosie down.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Cliff Ferre, as he was known, who was not Italian, even though he, on many of his double entendre records, sounded as if he was. He actually was born in Virginia, in Vermont, and died in Massachusetts. But the only reason that I knew who he was, other than Dr. Demento would play Rosie, Please Don't Bang on the Piano, and Fran from Austin wanted to hear it, was after he recorded that stuff, which was 1956. It was Chem Records, owned by some songwriter of non-note. And they put out an album, and I'm not making that up, yeah, Looks Like Fun was the name of the album. Should have been Sounds Like Fun. I'll let you hear a little favorite indoor sport in a moment, because that was one of my faves. But like I said, it was all double entendre, like the broad jumper. You can fill it in yourself. But early days of television, it was just like the Wild West, no doubt about it. And it was complicated by licenses were awarded. And then in 1948, the FCC said, we're going to put a freeze on this. And the FCC does not allocate anything between September 30th, 1948 and April of 1952. And so the stations that had the licenses before that, like Florida's first station, which was Miami's first station, Channel 4, WTBJ, Mitchell Wolfson's station, that got on the air. But then there was a freeze, obviously, everywhere. And after that, there was somewhat of a feeding frenzy. And initially, you know, television was just two steps above experimental in some ways. But allocations had been awarded before there were licensees. And in Miami, it was 2, 4, 7, and 10 on the V, with 2 being instructional, ultimately public broadcasting, but initially instructional. And 4 was WTVJ, the Wolfson station. He owned Wameco Theaters as well. So you were really talking about 7 and 10. And it, of course, became contested 6 ways to Sunday. But what happened is, ultimately, this Channel 10, which most people know today as WPLG and think that before it was WLBW, which it was, Larry B. Wilson. But before that, it existed as WPST. And this is where it was interesting. Because if you look at media history, the first television station license that was ever revoked in the United States of America was WPST, Channel 10 in Miami. And it had nothing to do with what they were broadcasting and everything to do with who owned it. So when the Channel 10 frequency was up for grabs, then it had been allocated, there were at least six different entities that were after it. And ultimately, at first it got awarded to the Katzentines. Frank Katzentine had been mayor of Miami Beach, and then he had WKAT 1360 right there on North Bay Road in Miami Beach and all this. And then Storer was in there for a while, but that they pulled out, and that's a different story. Anyway, it looked like absolutely Katzentine was going to get it, but at the last minute, they gave it to Public Service Television. Now, this was awarded in 1957. These applicants started in 1953. You know, within a year of the ability to start applying, they did. Public Service Television was actually NAL. And that means nothing to you as NAL, but it might mean something as National Airlines. And that's precisely what it was. George Baker was the founder of National Airlines, and he wound up being victorious. So how did he lose the license? And as I say, this was, oh man, before they awarded it to begin with, it was contentious out the yin-yang. You had Baker claiming that Katzentine was involved with gambling, and meanwhile, Baker owned Hialeah Racetrack, but he pledged he would never carry advertising from it or any racetrack and all that, and he cited the Kefauver Committee on Organized Crime, showing that behind the glitter of South Florida lies a moral decay or something of that nature. And boy, WPST is going to be broadcasting it, televising courtroom proceedings and on and on, broadcasting religious programming free of charge. Yeah, you name it, he said it, he got the license. So how did he lose the license? Oh, this is just great. It turns out that he had bribed a commissioner. Yeah, you know, some say bribed, others say it was the close relationship. But however you want to name it, the bottom line is that the FCC in 1961 yanked the license on behalf of Miami native Richard A. Mack, a member of the FCC, him directly being influenced by Thurman Whiteside. And you're saying, who's Thurman Whiteside? He was the attorney for NAL. And so it was that they stripped them of the license, they opened it up again, and then that was another saga, which LBW, Larry B. Wilson, by then Larry Wilson was dead, but his Cincinnati-based company got the license. But anyway, along the way, for these 57 to 61, this station wanted to go out of its way to, if not have programming in court and religious broadcasting, but certainly serve the public interest in ways heretofore unknown, or maybe ways very known, like kid shows and stuff like that. And one of the things that they put on in their Biscayne Boulevard studios was this Good Morning Miami show, long before anybody else was saying that's for sure. And they got a lady, Molly Turner, who had, you know, basically she'd been on TVJ and all that and a lot of freelance stuff. And she was sort of well known. Ultimately, I think she became the weather gal, but she was the co-host of Good Morning Miami. And the host was Cliff Foray. And he was, yeah, that's how we got back to the story. He was there for 3 years. Well, actually, until the license was yanked, he was there. So Cliff Foray, before he went down to Miami, was recording all these double entendre records. He also had been a dancer and had been on Broadway and a number of other things. And what's really sad is you try to find a decent bio. I haven't recently. Maybe the internet's been updated. But you don't find much on him. Like I say, we always call him Cliff Foray, Channel 10. But it was Cliff Foray, and it was a lot of double entendre stuff. And as I say, he put out that one album on Chem, and it was terrific. Cuts like A Favorite Indoor Sport.
We do it with the television on. We do it until we're pale and wan. We never had so much fun in our lives. We even do it now with each other's wives. It's a wonderful indoor sport. It's a wonderful indoor sport. Just like they say on a rainy day, it's a wonderful indoor sport. We've done it so much that we are thinner now. We don't even stop to eat dinner now. But we'll have to give this playing up, because the men find it difficult staying up. It's a wonderful indoor sport.
Yes, indeed. So, Cliff Foray, rest in peace. As it died in, he was about 75, died in Massachusetts. And I think that was in the 90s, but I'm not sure. Believe me, it wasn't a big obit. So, 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh, and we will get Robert's, the one who really loves you, on his request from Stickney. And your calls are wanted. Other than we'll tell you if you need an exorcist, or if someone in your life does. We'll go over the signs coming up, or maybe take your calls. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Love you.
WGN Radio. I'm Molly James. That, of course, is Mary Wells for Robert, and The One Who Really Loves You, 1962 on Motown. Yeah, it was before her huge mega hit, but certainly at the height of her popularity, I would say, and thanks to Smokey for that as well. Yeah, one little PS on that NAL scandal. Not only did ultimately National Airlines lose WPST, and oh man, there is such a soap opera involved in this, but they also wound up losing some of National Airlines' wonderful routes. And you remember back then the CAB, the Civil Aeronautics Board, well, they were accused of bribing them too. And yeah, right. And so it was that TWA and Northwest got a couple of the choice routes. And National was supposed to get St. Louis, Florida, and of course TWA got that, and Northwest got, I think, Chicago, Florida. In any event, you can bet that was all wrapped up into a scandal du jour. And there were so many of them at that time. Talk about the Wild West. And, you know, the only thing that was discovered that I thought was noteworthy was that, all right, so there were obviously ex parte conversations with the FCC Commissioner Mack, who, by the way, hastily resigned. But it turns out you can look at the history of any of these television license grants and you'll see the same thing. Not that there was necessarily bribery or anything of that nature, but as far as, you know, use anybody you can to gain some favor, there were ex parte communications with every last one of them. But what do you expect when there has been a freeze on applications and then all of a sudden the FCC says, well, here's the frequencies we're going to allow? Yeah, of course it's going to be a feeding frenzy. And oh, was it? All right. So the other thing on PST was Bill Weiler's dance show. And I always bring him up for people who grew up in Miami because for some reason, Rick Shaw, when he was at WQAM, when he went there in 63 till he left in 70, he really reigned and he had the Rick Shaw Show in place of American Bandstand. But the Rick Shaw Show was actually the second incarnation of what had been for years the Bill Weiler Show. And he was the guy who did it originally. All right. So John in Covington, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. What's going on?
Are you
on?
There?
I am here.
Oh, okay.
Are you there?
I am. All right. I am. Thank you.
Yeah.
This past Saturday, we took my mother out. It was her 90th birthday.
Oh, happy, happy.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We took her out. She had a good time. We all had a good time.
Yeah.
She's beginning to be a little bit on the senile side.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, one of the things that happened Saturday was we're at the restaurant, we're having a good time. Somebody recognizes me, you know, mm-hmm. a friend of mine. And, John, how are you? You know, well, when she hears John, she thinks that I'm her husband.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm named after my
right.
father.
Right.
Okay. So, amidst the family, I'm JJ on both sides
okay.
for that reason.
Right.
But you can't, when she hears somebody call me John, like, as I said,
yeah.
she thinks that I'm her husband. Now, here's the other thing, too, is the older I get,
the more you look like them, of course.
Exactly, yes, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, then, you know, it's just a little bit here and there, a little bit here and there. Like, so we get back to the house, her house,
mm-hmm.
and I had bought a big cheesecake for dessert.
Nice.
Well, my brother passed away 20 years ago from colon cancer.
Mm.
And she has a very nice picture, you know.
Yeah.
She's, oh my God. And I told her, Mom, if a doctor hears you doing this, he'll want to put you in a home. Here's what she wants to do. She wants to take the picture out of the frame and try to feed my brother a bite of cheesecake. And I said, Mom, you can't do that. You know you can't do that.
Oh, well,
why can't I?
Oh, man.
outside of the, you know, this just started happening a year ago, things like this. Mm. And she swears by, and my sister and I, we talked to the doctor.
Here, hang on a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
It's a problem that many people are facing in addition to John, and we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, 1966 on Stax. That was Stephanie and Madison's request. B-A-B-Y. Carla Thomas, of course. And, Isaac Hayes and co-wrote that for sure. So that's when Stax was involved with the Atlantic, much to ultimately their detriment. So Stax is not Atlantic. 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. So we're back to John in Covington with, sadly, a situation that many people face. You've got an elderly parent, and you're starting to see signs of, at this point, we'll just call it age-related dementia. So meanwhile, she wants to feed a picture of your brother a piece of cake. What happens after that?
Well, we just explained to her that that's not going to happen, and please, Mom, if the doctor hears you say that, he'll want to put you in a home. And my sister and I, we don't threaten her with that, but we just tell her, look, you know, maybe it's time. And as soon as we say that, then she straightens up for, okay, I don't know, about a week, you know. It's not to be found. But after that week goes by, so the doctor said, here's the thing, she swears by. And I believe it because many people I've heard have done this. She drinks a glass of red wine before bed.
That's fine.
Every night.
All right.
Okay, her mother lived to be 98 doing that, and her older sister lived to be 97 doing that, and she swears by that, and it's 5 ounces of red wine.
Okay.
So my sister and I, we asked the doctor about it, and he's, hey, let her do it, because
right,
none of the only medication she's on,
right,
that she's on Wellbutrin, and that will not have an adverse effect on it.
Right.
Okay, so fine. So, but we were, you know, double checking, making sure, and doctor said, I know it's going to be annoying. She's going to keep doing things over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, you're right. He says, well, what are some of the things? And I said, every time I see her, okay, she tells me, do you realize that my daddy, that she means my grandfather,
mm-hmm,
that my daddy owned the first racehorse to be disqualified from Latonia Racecourse in 1959?
Okay.
And I said, yeah, Mom, I know. and she says, that's not something to be proud of. And then she starts laughing, and then I have to start laughing. And, You know, fine. It's a forced laugh because I've heard it over and
well,
over.
Well, and that's fine. That, you know, you put up with that because there's absolutely no benefit in arguing or in demeaning her, saying, "Mom,
exactly.
You keep saying that." You know, you just handle that.
You have to put up with it like that.
Well, I even hate to call it putting up with. I mean, these are just not everybody, but this sounds like age-related dementia rather than anything else in terms of that. It sounds like she's still able to care for herself.
She is.
Yeah,
absolutely, she is.
So I would never be thinking about, gee, we ought to warehouse her. I would hope not.
I live 5 minutes away, and my sister lives in the other direction, 15 minutes away.
Right.
And we take turns every night, you know, looking in on her and taking out her garbage and whatnot and making sure she's got things. And
well,
but here's another thing she does, and it is kind of cute actually, but every time she sees me now, not every time, mm-hmm. but a lot of times, she'll say, when I was in the hospital after I had you, my girlfriend Lois came by with a movie and television mm-hmm. magazine, and did you know, this is what she says, and I quote, did you know that Ozzie Nelson was so jealous of, to Beaver guy that played Wally. With Tony Dow. Did you know that he was so afraid that Tony Dow was a nice-looking kid and that was going to take away from Ricky Nelson's popularity? And then she said, and I believe this because she's quoting things, you know, verbatim, I can tell. And she says that he brought in a character in 1957 by the name of Wally, and he was, and my mother is pretty educated, he brought in a Falstaff character by the name of Wally, so that way it wouldn't look, you know, made Falstaff Wally on...
All right. Well, you know, and so these are stories that she loves and that she remembers. Now, the other thing is that if most of these things are memory problems, that you know, may be different from full-on dementia anyway, because memory loss is fairly common as we age, and that heightens some of the memories we have from early on, like your mother telling the same stories over and over. That's
right.
That's fairly common. So it's just just part of the deal, and you've still got your mind, and it's basically your job to just make her comfortable and loved while she's here.
That's right. You're right, Raleigh. But I'm not selfish, and believe me, I'm glad my mom's around because she still has good days. But here's the thing. This is going to sound like I'm a jerk, but I'm going to say it anyway. When her parents died, she was in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So she grieved for 6 months, and then she moved on with her life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 66, and I don't know.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying, but you sort of, when you're talking about grief and all that, of course it's difficult to watch a loved one go through this. There's no doubt about it that it will have an emotional impact, but you've got to be able to get it somewhere where you can put it away and not let it rule your life. You can't become the caregiver 100%, and that's the meaning in a whole existence of your life. You know that there are certain hours you're going to be with her, and you'll do that, but then put it on a shelf somewhere and live your life.
I appreciate your kind thoughts. I really do.
Yeah,
you're
well,
the
that,
best,
yeah, well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, being a caregiver is very often much harder than being the patient. And in order for you to be successful at caregiving long term, you have to care for yourself first. Sort of like on the airlines when they say, put the oxygen around you first and then handle your child, right? Or the ones that say, choose which one's most likely to have the highest earning capacity, go to them first. But regardless, if you don't care for yourself, you're not going to be able to help somebody else. So There's nothing on God's green terra firma which says that you must create your be-all and end-all to being the caregiver. It's just a part of your life, and hopefully not that big a part in terms of how you're focused and how you can get some pleasure yourself. And it's something that more and more people are going to experience as more and more parents live long. And there's so many ways that it can play out. But the more you can, it's odd because I'll say this and it doesn't sound right, but the more you can depersonalize it, which is very difficult, but you kind of have to get it academically in a place where you can, where, like I say, you can leave it on the shelf and then go live your life to the fullest. So that, yeah, I have spoken. Like, what do I know? 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh, but been there and done that in terms of taking care of parents. So even adopted parents who didn't bother to tell you. All right, so we'll get to James on the south side, and there's room for you as well. And we do have Slime from the checkout line, and I won't let the evening completely go by without telling you how to tell if you're in need of an exorcist. Who knows? Maybe this is something that has plagued a loved one close to you, tongue-in-cheek to some degree when I say that. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. Yes, indeed. Yeah, probably the best thing he ever did as far as that goes, and certainly one of the biggest Hispanic request records in the United States. Doesn't matter if it's a Cuban request record in Miami or if it's a Hispanic request record, Mexican request record in East L.A. Just a giant. 1965 on Chess, and Billy would have turned 87 last weekend. Sadly, died in a car wreck at 32 years old. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. And we'll go to the man of 10,000 stories, James, on the south side. All right, James, welcome back to WGN Radio.
How are you?
Well, I don't know. After reading your stories, I just never know. Boy, talk about either people behaving badly or people coming down with the damnedest diseases. If we had to eliminate the murder, mayhem, politics, and diseases, what are we left with in these stories?
Okay, well, hopefully there's the ones where it's somebody that did something good. There's not too many. It's hard to have to keep looking, and finally I find some. And they usually grouped under either two categories, either Upworthy or a couple other ones related to that.
Well, I think you need to start looking for news of the weird. So, you know, things that will at least at least make you laugh. Because, boy, I tell you what, I read these stories and I just say, I guess I should give it all up now.
I'll tell you the one that really, I would say, where the guy plotted to kill his exes and feed the toddler to his pet python.
Right.
At that point, I wanted to basically say, "Oh, bring me a mongoose."
Yeah, right.
I wanted to basically that's your group of them, so they can take out the python.
Right. Right. So the other thing that's truly scary is the amount of stories of misdiagnoses. I was reading one you had just sent of some guy who his eye is getting larger. It gets to the point where it looks like it's going to fall out of his head, and everybody in the NHS system in England is saying, "Oh, it's fine. Don't worry about a thing." It turned out that he had cancer for God knows how long. And that's worrisome. Or I guess the one that really got me was the story in India where the diners, you know, and very often at these hotty-totty meals where, you know, you're very upscale and all that, they'll give you a little freshener to cleanse your palate, as they say. Well, these people cleanse their palate, and the next thing they're spitting up blood and dying. The after-dinner mouth fresheners were dry ice.
Which is basically carbon dioxide.
Yes. Who on earth... Yeah, and apparently they've arrested a hotel restaurant manager. Well, what is he thinking? So now I know, okay, don't eat the sorbet if it's a between meal freshener. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm like, excuse me, is this the restaurant legit?
Yeah. Well, that's not the way I want to find out. That's for sure. Of course, we have stupid criminals behaving badly, or criminals inventive. The guy who cut the hole in the floor in the museum to steal things was pretty out there. Exactly how did he think he wasn't going to be discovered?
Yeah, it was a military museum.
That's right. Yes, and he wanted a polo trophy. Yeah, and what was interesting though. Is that nobody noticed it during the crime, obviously, but it was his DNA found on the base.
It will tell.
And by the way, the reason they had his DNA is that the base of the cup wouldn't fit through the hole he cut. So, you know, here's another nuclear physicist.
Yeah, let's put it this way. You obviously failed either geometry one of those other ones.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't make it through plane geometry. That should have been pretty simple. Right. So, as usual, they are a plethora of fine stories, and you've ended the hour, and thank you.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Take care. Okay.
All right, you too.
I hope you feel better.
Thanks. Appreciate it. You too. All right. We'll pick it up right there. We have another hour of this right here on WGN Radio.
Be free, no. Ooh, ooh.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Etta James, 1967 Cadet. It was the flip side of Tell Mama. And that's the one Barry in New Hampshire wanted to hear. I'd rather go blind. 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And yes, we will get to signs that you may need an exorcist. The interesting thing about that, by the way, is apparently Catholic priests designated to handle exorcisms, while that was for many decades untalked about and down to about a dozen across the country now, 150 in the last decade. So we'll let you know what's going on. But right now, I'll tell you what very often needs an exorcism, and that's radio. All right, so Nick in Baltimore, what are we talking about?
Yeah, radio needs an exorcism here. I wanted to ask a question about the old WIL in St. Louis, 1430, became something else, and now it's gone.
Oh, that's interesting, because and I'll be happy to do that, but it said to be ION 1430, and I thought, Ionia, Michigan, now that's a little radio station. I'm surprised you'd even know about it. Well, it didn't.
No, okay. it was WIL in St. Louis,
yes.
But it became KZQZ.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Broadcast from 1922 to 2020, so 98 years on the air, and no more. It was one of the first to have a license in the greater St. Louis area. I think it was WEB, but for most of its life, it was a WIL. And the FCC revoked the license. And the reason was, very often it's ownership. You know, as we were talking before about WPST Channel 10 in Miami. Yeah, it turned out that the ownership was bribing the FCC. Well, in this case, it turned out that the owner was, well, a convicted felon. And so it was.
Oh.
Yeah, that's just an absolute not, you know, character and all that kind of stuff. And what they discovered was that a convicted felon had effectively taken control over the station, and they revoked it. And then when they did, I think they revoked it like in March, and it was still on the air for more than a month after that. But it was, like I said, it was originally WEB and Eddie Benson, and that was in the early days, and no one would really care about that. Although it was around for a while, but in when WIL debuted, and I think that was about the time that they had the Federal Radio Commission around 1925, and there were a number of things that went on there. And originally, of course, the frequencies were different, of course, prior to 1941, and other stations shared the frequencies and all that kind of stuff. But by the 30s, IL was claiming they were the first commercial station on the air in St. Louis, the first to broadcast the police blotter. They didn't call it that, but the first to broadcast election returns. You know, so they were the biggest little station in the nation was the big thing. And, of course, in 1949, and this was after the frequency swap of 41, it got to move to 1430, where it got some more power, because 1430 was a regional rather than a local frequency. And it was interesting, of course, because that became a Balaban station, and that was about 57. They sold it to Balaban, and they also sold WIL in Fort Lauderdale, but that never meant anything. In any event, IL really was the first top 40 station, because remember that Todd Storrs, the last station he bought was KXOK, and he didn't do that until 1960. And so originally, the Balaban's IL, you know, this is where Dan Ingram was and Ron Lundy and, you know, Jack
right.
Carney, you know, so this was a big deal. Then Lynn bought it in the latter 60s along with the FM. And so interesting, of course, Lynn, you normally think of some great top 40 stations, but they changed it to all news and then to country. And in 68, it became country, and it did very well there. In fact, for years, Wally Clark was their general manager, and he later, you know, wound up at Kiss FM and all that kind of stuff in L.A. But Lynn kept it until about mid-80s, 86 maybe, and sold it to Heritage. And then, you know, for a while they were doing basically the music of What's Left of Your Life, but they didn't call it that. Sinclair bought it. And I think they bought all of the Heritage stations, and that would have been maybe 97. And so, because Heritage was, anyway, Emmis wound up acquiring the stations from Sinclair, and so they agreed that they were only going to get some of them. But anyway, they wound up swapping it with RTH, and it was a whole big thing. But meanwhile, and there were other swaps involved in that one too. And it had changed call letters for a while. Then they went back to WIL. And like that. So, you know, by the time you get to ZQZ, you're talking like well after 2000. So you're out of my league now. And I think that there was an auction for that. And I think that nobody bid.
So the frequency is gone, though, from St.
Well, that's
Louis,
what I'm saying.
Right?
I think, now again, you'd really have to get somebody who's, you know, like, I could tell you what happened in 1957 like it was yesterday. You ask me what
right.
happened in 2021, I have a little trouble. But I
right.
think that there were several allocations that went up for auction, and I think there were no bids. It was like an eight-day auction, and there were no bids. And I'll have to look that up because it was EMT, which was Entertainment Media Trust. They got their licenses revoked because of Bob Romanek, and Romanek was a convicted felon. And so it wasn't just the 1430; it was other as well. And so anyway, like I say, after they were revoked, they were on the air literally, you know, for a month or two, pirate broadcasting, as it were. But so nobody bid on any of it. So those frequencies are dark.
Well, that's really, you know, because that was a historic, like you said, a historic station.
Sure
so.
Was.
I mean,
sure. Well, when it was
Balaban.
And when it was Balaban, oh, man, it was just great. You know, in the Dan mm-hmm. Ingram days, it really was just a great little radio station. And I think Gary Stevens went there too for a while. But Ingram was there and others. And yeah, it was just terrific. But I'm trying to think of what the others that. But several went. Nobody bid on this auction.
Mm.
So.
Well, I wanted to ask you something else, Wally, about because you were in Miami.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Okay, and. You're familiar with the WMJX thing?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the old Storer station originally, and they had it as JHR, and then they sold it for $495,000. They sold it in 1971. It became the first standalone FM top 40 station. The brothers from Milwaukee bought it. Why can't I think of their name? It'll come to me in a second. But anyway, they bought it. So they had OKY, and they also had KCBQ. I can't think of their name. That's terrible. They had a sister, Rose. I remember, not like Cornelius Brothers, but I remember they had a sister.
Yeah.
What the hell was their
KCBQ
name? The Bartels. The Bartel Brothers. There you go. That's who they
okay.
were. Yeah.
Now, how did it happen that the, and I don't mean to take your time, but how did it happen there was a contest problem? And then Charter got it, but then Charter lost the license because
of the contest. Yeah, the Bartel, and it got to Charter and all that. But here's what happened: they hired a morning man, Greg Austin, and he did a contest that they claimed he had been lost in the Bermuda Triangle. And the whole thing was, you know, find Greg Austin, he's lost in the Bermuda Triangle. Now, that alone would not lose a license, but here's what will. Falsifying the news. They actually put it in their news reports that Greg Austin was missing in the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh.
Well, Greg Austin was home in bed. And so it was that ultimately that frequency went dark. And it went dark for a few years. And when it came back, oh gosh, slightly. I think it was like 96.3 and it became 96.5 or vice versa. I'd have to look. But
96.5.
Yeah, well, it was 96.3 when it was first MYQ. See, JHR was what it was when Storer had it, and then when the brothers, the Bartel brothers, bought it, it became WMYQ. And they were, you know, they were big contest was, of course, that, you know, if you answer your phone, I listen to the news. Well, no, actually, it was WMYQ plays less commercials. Because I remember this so well. They had T-shirts. I still have one of them because I said... And not only that, but they're illiterate because, of course, it would be WMYQ plays fewer commercials, but that wouldn't sound good. So WMYQ plays less commercials. And, so they slaughtered the English language in their contest. But they had a lot of winners, and one of the first ones was actually a questionable winner. It might have been an inside job. But Al Casey became their PD early on, and he did a nice job. In fact, they transferred him when they bought KSLQ in St. Louis. They transferred him there. But Buzz Bennett was down there, and a number of people. Bobby Rich, you know, I mean, it was more. They were only two blocks away from where I worked on Arthur Godfrey Road, and I mean, they were literally revolving doors. If I'd go down to the Burger King for lunch, I could look on the street where all the jocks' cars were, and I could see the bumper stickers on their cars, and know, oh, they got somebody new. Yeah, I remember they got a couple people from Davenport, KSTT. I said, well, there's a revolving door for you, and it was sort of like that. And Roby Young was there for a while, and Ronnie Grant was there for a while, and Lee Abrams. I remember he was just out of high school. He pitched them. It was one of the first things he pitched. It wanted to be consultant. And I still have the proposal he submitted to them. My favorite part is my uncle can get us t-shirts. But
speaking of contest, at the old WITH, when it was DJQ, they had a contest where they were giving away a car, and I found out about this talking to the late Wayne Gruen over at FBR.
Yeah.
And what happened was they had a contest, speaking of contest fraud, where they were giving away a car, and you had a series of, they'd give out, you'd get these keys.
Yes,
and open
yes.
The car and,
uh-huh.
And nobody won. In fact, right. My sister got one of those keys.
Right.
You know, didn't win the car. Come to find out, the general manager had the winning key, and they found out about it, and he had to give it up, and they gave away the car to somebody. But
yeah, oh man, those key contests were, of course, KRLA ostensibly lost their license over that, but it wasn't exactly what happened. They had the Golden Key contest. This wasn't a car. The Golden Key was going to turn on their new 50,000-watt transmitter at their new location in El Monte. And so the problem is they gave all these clues, but they hadn't yet buried the key. It was one of those you had to find it. A type thing. And there was, but so while the FCC was investigating, because there were complaints, the Golden Key contest, because the key wasn't buried, they discovered, oh my God, the owner's not an American. And that's what caused them to lose the license, because the owner was a Canadian, Jack Kent Cook, and he had the license under his brother's name, but he ran it. And so the FCC yanked the license.
So that's what happened to KRLA.
Yeah, and then it went to the Oak Knoll Foundation, which was a committee of blue-haired ladies in Pasadena who were all in the Blue Book, the registry. And they ran it from the mid-60s until the license was awarded in 1980. And that was a cluster, too, because there were a dozen applicants, and they were able to throw out one of them. So there were ostensibly 11 applicants, and they awarded it to Bob Hope. And the other applicants kind of went crazy, saying, this is favoritism and this USO tour. And all this. So the FCC walks back their decision and says, okay, we're awarding it to all of you. And at the end of 3 years, the Bob Hope Group can buy the rest of you out at the fair market price. And that's how that license was awarded. But it was Bob Hope's group that had the operating control. And they brought in a guy who had been man of the year in San Francisco when he managed his station there in 1955. Talk about out of touch. They undid everything Art LeBeau did.
Oh wow! So they.
Yes.
What did Bob Hope do with it? I mean,
after 3 years, he bought the others out, and then he sold it to Greater Media.
Okay.
But in the process, see what it was. Art LeBeau had put his own money into this, and he really made this radio station sing. I mean, it's 1110 on the AM dial. It has some signal problems in a few places, but boy, it covered East LA, and he went after that audience, and he owned them, just owned them. His format was half oldies and half disco, but he was sold out. Now, the problem is when you're sold out on an East L.A. station, your rate of your commercials is significantly less than if you were serving, say, the West Side, right? And so here come the Bob Hope guys, and they look at this, and they're, oh, we can't have this, you know. And so they decide they're going to go compete with K-Earth. And never mind that K-Earth is on FM and is super serving the area it's doing anyway. So they try to go up against them, and they say, well, we're going to change the bumper stickers. By the way, first error, because those bumper stickers that Art LeBeau had been out for over a decade. And I don't care where you were, you saw this blue and yellow bumper sticker everywhere. I had a good friend who was general manager of KFWB at the time, and he said, it just drives me crazy, and all these bumper stickers. And I laughed, and I said, well, remember, most of them are actually cars abandoned and parked on the side of the road. They're not current models. And we all laughed about that. But here comes Bob Hope's group, and the first thing, they're going to redesign the bumper sticker. It's like, bad move. Everybody knows that bumper sticker. Next, we're going to appeal to the West Side. Again, bad move. It's being super served. All right, we're going to have a contest. Our contest is pick up your new Heart and Soul of Rock and Roll bumper sticker at Kentucky Fried Chicken. You may win $100. Now, excuse me, that might have been appealing to somebody in East L.A. Someone on the West Side, $100, that's maybe dinner and a movie without parking in Westwood. So I said, they don't need a competitor. They'll just go ahead and compete with themselves. And so by the time it was sold, it was a mercy selling.
Oh, wow.
It really was. Yeah.
I mean, you know, what a history of...
Oh.
And you know it all.
Well, you know, and I guess the longest running guy there of anybody was Johnny Hayes, who had been there from 65 till he went over to K-Earth in the 90s somewhere. But he lived through it all. And the stories I used to regularly hear were just classic.
You know, K-Earth is interesting, too, because what I heard from a friend of mine, you know, who worked for CBS at the time, he said that, Infinity, I guess, that they actually paid more for that station based on, you know, their revenue.
Mm-hmm.
This is when they were oldies, and they were, you know, they actually paid more for it.
Yeah, hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. Oh. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yes, it's Lloyd Price. Of course it's Lloyd Price. And it was Cleveland Dennis who wanted to hear that early for Lloyd Price, too. 1952 on Specialty. Yeah, before the Empire days. All right, we're talking to Nick from Baltimore about K-Earth 101. And so we're talking about the Infinity purchase in 93, the $110 million from Beasley.
Yeah.
What about it?
Yeah, from what he told me, they've actually paid more money for it than originally, you know, it was up for sale for because of the spot load and the ratings. I'm not sure.
Great dial position, beautiful Mount Wilson site, but RKO had to divest it, of course, because they lost all their licenses and they were able to sell it as opposed to just have to fold it. And so they sold it to Beasley in 89, and Beasley paid 86.6, which is a lot of money, but that's for AM/FM. They spun off the AM the next year, KHJ. They spun that off for $23 million to Lieberman. who had bought the old K Garbage KGBS and made a 10Q and all that. Well, bought a 10Q and went Spanish. In any event, K Earth was an interesting deal. It was one of the first FM licenses in the country back in 1941. Remember, the Don Lee Network was there on the West Coast, and Don Lee got K45LA, which at the time was at 44.5 on your dial. And then, of course, they standardized that to originally 99.7 and 46, and in 47 it went to 101.9. But when KHJ came on in 65, they simulcasted for a couple years, but then you weren't allowed to do that 24 hours after that. And so that's when Drake Chenault debuted Hit Parade, and they were doing that, and then they swung into local oldies, basically 72. And the guy who really did well with that radio station, again, it was not a radio station I would, in those days care to listen to. It really was geared to the West Side, but very, very successful. Bob Hamilton, not the one who had the tip sheets, but the programmer Bob Hamilton did a wonderful job with that. And after that, it started to languish. And when Beasley got it, actually, I had a friend who was living with me at the time, Bill Drake, and it was time to get him off the couch. And so I wrote these proposals, one of them I sent to Beasley, and, the history of it and how to do it and all this stuff. And anyway, they called up Bill and hired him as a consultant. And so he, in turn, brought in a better program director, and then brought over Morgan and Steve.
So you were the brains behind that.
Well, it's funny because their chief engineer, who I truly love, Bob Canner, who sadly is no longer with us, used to be over at WMCA, and he came to KHJ, and just a wonderful chief engineer. But in a meeting, Bill Drake was showing these charts and these graphs and all this about the hit, and Bob Canner says, "Raleigh did a great job." And I heard that from a couple of the guys later. I called to Canner. I said, "You didn't really." He said, "Yeah, I had to." So, I said, so, I'm sure I still have the proposal somewhere. I had sent one to them, and I sent one to CBS, and I got calls within 24 hours from both of them. And it was funny because, of course, if I did it under my name, I'd still be waiting for the phone to ring. Let's face it. But you do it under Bill Drake, so they both call. And poor Bill. I love Bill, but. He would drink literally a quart of booze, and I know what a quart is a day. And so I thought, CBS, that's not a good fit. I could just see what would. So I do Beasley, and so he called Beasley, and on the spot, yep. When can you get here? So I sat there in June of 1990 and redid the music.
Wow.
So I remember he was asking me something. He said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to have a Tell Mama weekend." And that became the big joke. And of course I wasn't, but so after that, yeah. But I listened to the stuff that was on there, and it was just so wrong. And they had a program director who was just a disaster. I said to Bill, I said, "You're going to be a hero again, because this is going to be easy to fix."
See,
Oh yeah,
you were great with the. What can I say?
Well, I'd still be waiting for the call, even though it was my research and my music and my graphs and my everything. It was under a name that mattered, and it was so funny because within a year I started to get these calls. I'll never forget Paul Drew. "You have to help me," and I'm like, I didn't have the heart to tell him, "No, Paul, I don't think I can help you." But. So yeah,
it's all about marketing, isn't it?
Well, if you have the name, that's. Yeah. But unfortunately, by that time, Bill couldn't have done it himself. He still was very bright. Don't get me wrong, but he wasn't, going to be putting a proposal together.
What I'm going to do, I didn't mean to take all this time from you, but it's been interesting, and I've learned a lot. I always learn when I talk to you. I swear.
Well, it's always fun. Nobody else cares about this stuff, so I'm always glad when you call.
Well, it's history, and we all lament, we all want the, it's never going to come back the way it was.
No, it can't. No, of course not.
And, unfortunately, and I tell my friends this who, I talk to every day, they love, listening to the air checks and stuff like that. And I said, the whole thing is it's not coming back the way it was, but you can still hear it online, but, you know, remember it as it was and you know, enjoy the music. But unfortunately, it is radio. The business has changed so much, well, even from when I was in it.
Sure, but that's secondary. The reason it can't come back is not because the business has changed. It's because society has changed. And right. You know, when you're talking about top 40 at its height, every kid in town listened to the same night jock. Mm-hmm. We all had the same shared experience. You probably heard this recently, and I think it may be a disaster technologically. But we'll see. The FCC just approved geofencing, whereby stations are going to be allowed to have a series of booster stations where they run commercials to one part of town that don't run on another part of town. And so,
oh, great.
Oh, yeah, I know. I get back to WITH. Remember when the general manager there boasted his pinpoint coverage? We only covered the areas you need. Well, in this case, that sort of, because he had a bad signal. That's sort of on steroids, because that's exactly what they're going to try to do. Now, right now, it's boosters, not translators. Where it'll go later, I don't know. But for the time being, we're going to see how that does it. But that's trying to super serve very local areas down to zip codes.
They're really messing everything up.
Yeah, well.
They really see the problem is, and again, I don't mean to take your time, but the problem is you get so many people who don't know what they're doing, and they're not broadcasters, and they don't have a love for the business. You talked about shared experience. That goes to a lot of other things too. In terms of, you know, because of social media and everything,
yeah.
You know, that's the new shared experience.
Of course,
right?
It is. And it's not shared in the same way, though. You know, again,
no.
Where if you grew up in the 50s or through the 60s, arguably, like I say, you were listening to the same music. That's why oldies were so easy to do in 1975
right.
or 1980. But, you know, in the last 20 years, no. Kids of any age, 13, 14-year-old kids, they're not all listening to the same thing.
No.
And, you know, you can super serve whatever it is you like, but it isn't a shared experience in that way. But as far as the localism, absolutely that's online. And so, you know, gone are the days where you're going to have the high school reporter report the football scores. You know, that's available to you online at a keystroke. So,
right, and they don't listen the way we did.
Well, no, because they don't have to. Again, they have choices.
Yeah.
You know, that we
right.
didn't have. I mean, you know, you did. You certainly didn't have much in the way of video choices. You had a couple black and white stations.
Right.
You know, so the choices are almost unlimited now. That's not to say that there isn't a place for radio by any means. It's just to say that people who want to bring back what was happening in 1959, you can't do it sociologically. You don't even have to get to the business or programming. The social psychology has changed.
No, but what you have, what radio can do, and they're beginning to come around to it, but it's you know, they're always too late, is that the change in demographics, people who listen to the radio are adults now.
Well,
you know, and that's
we've been spending since 1975 a lot of money saying there's no room for you. How about all the program directors who blew off their teens and were proud of it?
Right.
You know, and that's because of ratings and all that. Yeah, and there's so many things that could be done. I'm not necessarily being down on it, you know, and saying, well, the medium's mm-hmm. dead. It's not like that, because again, mm-hmm. what we're talking about is the delivery truck. You put something on the air right. that people want to hear, and if they can't hear it anywhere else, they're going to listen to it, and it doesn't matter
right.
if it's AM or it's FM or it's satellite or it's online. If they want to hear it, they'll hear it.
They'll find it.
Yes, they will. And that's
yep.
that's the bottom line. The only thing is you have to have a signal good enough for them to be able to hear it. But assuming they can hear it, if that's what they want to hear, and you're the only people giving it to them, they'll listen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to call next week.
I hope so.
With some other stuff.
All right. And, looking forward to it.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. So 888-876-5593. We'll get to Laura in Willowbrook and room for you, too, coming up on WGN Radio.
In the kitchen, I know she'll get a licking for doing.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is, of course, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, the Hooch Coochie Coo, 1960 on King, and Bill from Boston asked for that, and happy to do it. Written, of course, by Hank Ballard, along with Billy Miles, who was an interesting guy. Wrote songs for everybody, from Little Willie John to Brooke Benton and Gladys Knight, you name it. And he had some singles himself on Ember and on King, and I think the only thing that hit was The Joker, that's what they call me. It was a good little record, but did some stuff for the Mellow Kings and on had his own music publishing company, Selbon, which is Nobles spelled backwards, and that was his name, Billy Miles Nobles, and did very well until he died. And that was I guess that was in Greenville, North Carolina. All right, so 888-876-5593. We got Laura in Willowbrook. Hello, Laura.
Hey, Raleigh, happy day.
Yeah.
I know we don't have much time, so I'll make it fast. Recently, my new thing is checking out one-hit wonders.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I just wanted to ask you something about it. One of the ones I used to like, and I came across it again, is like, oh, Love Grows.
And Edison Lighthouse?
The lead singer.
Well, Edison,
yes, and
Edison
the lead singer,
Lighthouse.
I think, is turning... Oh, yes. And...
Well, they weren't a real group. They were a studio group, and that was Tony Burrows who lead. Yeah, Tony Burrows was the lead singer of that. But he was also the lead singer of White Plains, My Baby Loves Lovin', and Brotherhood of Man, and on. So for there were other things, First Class. Oh. Yeah, so that was studio music.
Oh, no wonder, because I had all my pictures of what a one-hit wonder is, and I thought I read it said he sang on 5 one-hit wonders. They're like, well, how can it be a one-hit wonder if he sang five times?
Well, because like First Class was what was him. Domino was him. You know, the Pipkins, give me that ding, you know, and all that. So, you know, like I say, White Plains, you know, all that stuff. I don't know that I consider that stuff one hit wonders. You know, Edison Lighthouse, these were just studio records, and you saw a number of people who did that. A lot of the bubblegum stuff happened that way, the stuff the Cazenes Cats did, and all like that.
Really?
Yeah, so if you're going for one,
I had no idea.
Yeah, if you're going for one-hit wonders, look for artists or groups who in and of themselves only had one chart record. Now, then you have to dig a little deeper to decide what it means. For instance, you may see something, you'll say, okay, Joey Powers, Midnight Mary, that qualifies. Well, if you look at how much he wrote for other people, are you still going to count that? Well, maybe. You have to decide what your rules are.
Oh, yeah. I honestly never thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, it's up to you, but in the future, could you do either Love Grows or something by Lighthouse or Tony Burrows?
Oh, God. You hate me, don't you? All right, so I'll try to find something by Tony Burrows that doesn't make me nauseous. I'm sure there's something.
Okay.
All right.
You could just pick something that you like, and I'll go with that.
Well, I doubt I'll like it, but that I'll tolerate. I'll look for something, I promise. All right. Thanks, Laura.
Okay, thanks,
appreciate
Raleigh.
It.
Good day.
Yeah. All right, so we got a couple minutes here, and probably not enough to finish the exorcism. So, well, not that we're doing one, but we'll pick up the rest of the clues tomorrow night, because we have 3 hours tomorrow night, don't you know, 3 big hours. And signs of demonic possession? Well, now that I look at it, we've only actually got about a minute to spend together. So we'll also talk about what to do if you believe someone in your life is in fact possessed. And all right, so yeah, someone in your life, Linda Blair has nothing on them. Well, then this is the article for you. That's from the National Examiner, don't you know? And that also has a number of other stories, including Hollywood's Most Dangerous Bachelors. I bet you can't wait. All right, so 3 hours to spend together tomorrow. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. That makes this show easy for me to do, and you know I love easy. So 21 hours from now, we'll reconvene. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.